Welcome back to the Daily Report, brought to you by the COVID-19 Literature Surveillance Team.
We are your hosts, Will Smith
and Jasmine Robb,
bringing you the highlights from our newest report. The report for the week of February 1st, 2021.
Epidemiology. What does the literature say about the mask usage against COVID-19? A large international interdisciplinary group summarized the evidence that supported mask wearing to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. They reviewed direct epidemiological evidence, population-level impacts, transmission characteristics, laboratory-based source control experiments, personal protective equipment efficacy research, sociological considerations, and implementation policies. Authors conclude all evidence indicates that mask wearing effectively reduces viral droplet transmission and should be encouraged by officials to help minimize the spread of COVID-19. Immunologic response against SARS-CoV-2 may be compromised in multiple sclerosis patients. A case-control study of 48 suspected COVID-19 cases and 45 COVID-19 positive cases conducted at the MS Center of Catalonia in Barcelona, Spain, found similar incidence and outcomes of COVID-19 in MS patients compared to the general population. However, far fewer MS patients on long-term anti-CD20 therapies created SARS-CoV-2 antibodies than patients not on these medications, suggesting that the specific patient population may be at a higher risk of COVID-19 reinfection. It is unknown if this immunosuppressed population would be unable to generate immunity from the COVID-19 vaccines as well. The chronic neuropsychiatric sequelae of COVID-19 continue to raise questions. A literature review conducted internationally during 2020 by the CNS SARS-CoV-2 consortium found that varying autoimmune reactions, anosmia, and delirium in COVID-19 patients suggest potentially long-term implications for central nervous system disorders. While immune profiles, age, and activity levels may explain variations in the effects, long-term evaluation will be performed to properly understand post-infectious biological changes in the CNS. A multidisciplinary team of researchers from various hospitals use a stem cell donor registry in Dresden, Germany, to conduct a cross-sectional study among 6,257 COVID-positive patients. They found that blood group A was a risk factor for contracting SARS-CoV-2 when compared to blood group O. The data also demonstrated that blood group B was associated with higher risk of severe respiratory tract infection and respiratory hospitalizations compared to blood group O. These findings provide insight into the association between genetic variants in ABO blood type genes and risk for COVID-19 infection, as well as associated severe disease complications. Researchers from Stanford University used data reported by 30 colleges during the fall of 2020 to assess COVID-19 transmission associated with reopening of campuses. Results demonstrated a spike in infections during the first 2 weeks of in-person or hybrid instruction in nearly half of the institutions, with peak 7-day instances well above 1,000 per 100,000 people. They also found that while all colleges were able to quickly reduce transmission on campus, many failed to control the spread of the virus into the surrounding communities. These results suggest that the first 2 weeks of college reopenings are an especially high-risk time period, with potential to cause super spreader events. The authors call for better control of viral spreading when reopening campuses, implementing limitation of the number of students during the initial weeks, regulation of testing, stressing the importance of isolation and quarantine, and continued rapid response regarding outbreaks. The Geneva Pediatric COVID Group characterized viral co-infections in 51 children infected with SARS-CoV-2 between March 1st and April 30th, 2020. 30 of whom lived in a household with an infected adult. 4 children from a household cluster were co-infected with picornaviruses, HMPV, and/or HCoV-NL63, while no adult household contacts had co-infections. The frequency of circulating respiratory viruses in all children was lower than in the same period in 2019. Authors suggest that COVID lockdown measures may have reduced circulation of other respiratory viruses, but children remain more vulnerable to respiratory viruses than the adults with the same community-level exposure.
Understanding the pathology. ABO blood groups showed minimal differences in SARS-CoV-2 antibody response, but blood group B had higher neutralizing antibody titers. A multi-center prospective cohort study involved 202 individuals who were eligible to donate COVID-19 convalescent plasma at the beginning of the pandemic. They found there was no difference in anti-SARS-CoV-2 spike IgA or IgG between ABO groups, but significantly higher neutralizing antibody, or NAB, titers were present in blood group B at 44%, compared to blood groups A at 25%, O at 20%, and AB at 0%. These findings suggest blood group B may have higher neutralizing antibody titers after recovery from COVID-19 infection and thus greater protection against future infections with SARS-CoV-2. However, further studies correlating ABO blood groups and disease severity are needed to further support these findings. Microthrombi is a major cause of cardiac injury in COVID-19. A pathologic analysis conducted of 40 autopsied hearts of patients who died while hospitalized for COVID-19 in Italy found that the microthrombi isolated in COVID-19 patients were richer in fibrin and terminal complement immunostaining compared to aspirated thrombi from percutaneous coronary intervention in other COVID-19 infected and uninfected patients with STEMI. This is most likely due to SARS-CoV-2 activation of multiple complement levels. Microthrombi were found to be significantly associated with focal myocyte necrosis in 82% of cases of the overall 14 cases with myocyte necrosis. These findings suggest the majority of cardiac injury found in subjects dying with COVID-19 is due to cardiac microthrombi, indicating a likely cause of cardiac injury among hospitalized COVID-19 patients, and highlights the need for further studies on the targeted use of antiplatelet, anticoagulant, and anticomplement therapies specifically tailored for microthrombi. Clinical research from France evaluated the viral loads and outcomes of 287 patients hospitalized with SARS-CoV-2 between March 3rd and April 5th, 2020. They found a median viral load of 4.76 to the log 10 copies per reaction on the initial upper respiratory swab at admission, with no difference between survivors and non-survivors. Respiratory viral load measurements were not predictive of in-hospital mortality or disease severity. Authors conclude there is no correlation between the viral load and disease severity and suggest individual comorbidities and immune responses to the virus contribute more to the outcomes. A review from Denmark examines the cytotoxic effects of SARS-CoV-2 on capillary function and the subsequent hypoxemia, which initiates a cycle of hypoxia-driven endothelial damage that may explain long-term complications of patients recovering from COVID-19. The authors investigate angiotensin-converting enzyme 2, or ACE2 receptors, pericyte integrity, endothelial surface lining by glycocalyx, neutrophil migration, and microthrombus in relation to systemic hypoxia secondary to COVID-19. The authors conclude with a discussion on long-term hypoxia, serotonin synthesis and mood disorders, and emphasize a need for biomarkers of capillary function in order to quantify the effects of SARS-CoV-2 on capillary function.
Transmission and prevention. Further robust research is necessary to deduce the link, if any, between COVID-19 vaccination efficacy and obesity. Researchers from Harvard Medical School, Massachusetts General Hospital, and Conscion Health in Pittsburgh refute previous speculations that obesity could be associated with reduced efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccines. Data from Phase 3 vaccine trials show Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine has 95.4% efficacy in people with obesity compared to 94.8% in people without obesity, and that the Moderna vaccine has an efficacy of 91.2% in people with severe obesity and 94.8% overall. Since obesity is one of the most significant risk factors for severe outcomes from COVID-19, the authors suggest that ongoing placebo-controlled vaccine trials designed with the necessary power for detecting differences among classes of obesity are important for post-vaccine risk stratification and public health strategy. A nanomechanical study done by researchers in Canada and China tested SARS-CoV-2 survival on 4 different surfaces. They used the spike protein on the outer surface of the SARS-CoV-2 virion, which is responsible for the transmission via fomites, and they found that they survived best on polystyrene, then stainless steel, then gold, then on glass, suggesting that fomite transmission of SARS-CoV-2 is prevalent and that more surfaces need to be tested to get a better understanding for both prevention and tracking transmission of the virus. Statisticians from the National Chiao Tung University in Taiwan used the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center data dashboard to evaluate the relationship between COVID-19 prevalence and mortality from COVID-19 in 36 countries. They found a positive correlation between the number of cases and COVID-19 mortality, with a mortality increase of 1.29% per every 1 in 1,000 increase in prevalence, though there was significant heterogeneity between countries. The author suggests a mortality prevalence ratio can help detect undocumented infections and emphasize the importance of infection prevention practices to minimize mortality from COVID-19. Virologist from the Laboratory of Retrovirology at the Rockefeller University in New York argues against withholding second doses of SARS-CoV-2 vaccines. He suggests that there is not enough evidence that the single-dose vaccination provides long-term immunity, citing data showing 50-fold higher neutralizing antibody titers after the second dose of the mRNA vaccination. The author also raises concerns that insufficient immunity after a single vaccine dose could drive antigenetic drift, leading to antibody-resistant variants. Scientists associated with BioNTech, Pfizer, and Tron GGMBH assessed the ability of BioNTech Pfizer mRNA vaccine to induce a neutralizing response against the new B.1.1.7 lineage of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. They found antibodies from individuals previously vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine and showed that they neutralized the new B.1.1 strain with a slightly reduced response compared to their action against the native Wuhan strain based on the 50% neutralization geometric mean titer. The author suggests that the Pfizer vaccine appears to offer sustained neutralization of new variants of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. An interdisciplinary group of researchers from the USA, Canada, and Brazil developed a model of SARS-CoV-2 transmission in the United States assuming 40% vaccination coverage in 284 days. With healthcare workers and high-risk individuals prioritized and no vaccine given to those under 18, vaccination reduced the overall attack rate from 9% to 4.6%, and adverse outcomes, defined as non-ICU hospitalizations, ICU hospitalizations, and mortality, decreased by 63%, 65%, and 69%, respectively. The author suggests that even low rates of vaccination could reduce the burden of COVID-19 on the United States if non-pharmaceutical public health interventions such as masking and hand washing continue.
Management. The World Health Organization recommends corticosteroids for patients with severe or critical COVID-19. An international team of researchers associated with the WHO summarized recommendations regarding the use of corticosteroids in COVID-19 patients based on results from 8 randomized controlled trials with an N of 7,184 patients. This found the use of corticosteroids in severely or critically ill patients resulted in a lower 28-day mortality. However, corticosteroid treatment in non-severe COVID-19 patients showed no change in mortality. These recommendations provide updated treatment guidelines for COVID-19 patients based on disease severity.
R&D, diagnosis and treatments. Microbiologists from Colombia, Venezuela, and the United States assess whether the Berlin-Charité protocol for RT-PCR assays could detect the new SARS-CoV-2 B.1.1.7 lineage from the United Kingdom. Using 3,296 full genome sequences, they found that the primer and probes detected 98% of the RDRP, N, and E genes targeted in the protocol, though several sequences were missed. The author suggests that while the Berlin-Charité protocol can detect most SARS-CoV-2 B.1.1.7 variants, future variants may evade detection, and incorporating different regions of the viral genome into existing testing could build redundancies that increase the likelihood of their detection. A scoping review conducted by medical institutions and laboratories in New Delhi, India in June 2020 identified 17 articles finding saliva-based molecular diagnostics as a simpler, time-conscious, and less technical alternative to nasopharyngeal swab collection for the detection of SARS-CoV-2. They compared parameters of gene targets, viral load, sensitivity, and point-of-care testing for initial screening in community and hospital-based settings. Salivary testing also allows for simpler self-collection, which decreases the amount of medical staff and personal protective equipment needed for screening settings. This article suggests more robust studies be performed to further assess salivary testing in asymptomatic cases, oral symptoms of infection, and accounting for age, sex, and other comorbidities. Another prospective cohort study from the emergency physicians in Argentina found that self-collected saliva samples may be an accurate alternative to the nasopharyngeal swab in detecting SARS-CoV-2 infections. Results demonstrated that 63 out of 174 asymptomatic patients in the emergency room tested positive via the gold standard, which is the nasopharyngeal swab. with saliva samples detecting 98% of these patients. The authors conclude that self-collected saliva samples for the diagnosis of SARS-CoV-2 could be an accurate and less invasive way to test certain populations while conserving PPE and exposing fewer healthcare workers to SARS-CoV-2.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening.
Continue to stay informed with us.
Read less, do more.
With COVID-19, LST.org.